GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
That's me, scientist, author, and environmental entrepreneur, and I'm the host for today's show.
I'm Bob Kessler, your executive producer.
Bob and I explore environmental issues and innovations and meet passionate people that are changing the world.
Yes, they do. Their ideas do have to make common and economic sense. You have to be passionate, but you got to meet those two other requirements.
And they have to make environmental sense. No greenwashing here. What are we going to be learning this week, Bob?
Nylon's a fabric that's pretty much everywhere. What if you could make it using solar power? We'll meet a scientist who figured that out. There was a nasty chemical spill in Lake Michigan earlier this spring. Can the EPA under Trump help prevent those things from happening? And if they can't, what can everyday people do?
You're going to meet all these people coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. Nylon, which is a great fabric because of how adaptable and durable it is, may be replaced by something more sustainable. A new textile, which is made from using solar energy, has been discovered by Miguel Modestino and his team at NYU. Miguel joins us now on GreenSense. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Well, nylon is something we use in countless ways every day. Tell us how nylon's made and some of the environmental disadvantages of manufacturing nylon.
Yeah, absolutely. So nylon was discovered in last century, around in the 1930. And since then, the process have evolved significantly. But today, the way that nylon is made is that we source chemicals from the petrochemical industry that can serve as raw materials for the process. And then we use fossil fuels to drive the process and provide the energy required. And what we're proposing to do here is to change the raw materials for something that can come from biomass, so plant waste, and then use that raw material and solar energy to produce nylon in a very similar way that is done today, but using clean energy sources.
And now you're proposing a way to use renewable energy to make nylon?
Yeah, so my research in the past 8 years or so have been on solar to fuel transformations. And we had a lot of experience developing solar to hydrogen generation devices. So these are devices that in the presence of solar energy and water produce hydrogen that you can then use as a fuel. The issue with fuels is that it's probably the cheapest thing that you can think of because it's a chemical that you burn at the end of the day. So for you to be able to incorporate clean energy concepts in the production of fuels is really difficult because you're always against fossil fuels that are very cheap today. So what we did was to start looking into processes that were similar in the way that we make solar hydrogen. And we come up with this molecule, adiponitrile, that was produced electrochemically. And then we start thinking about how we could incorporate solar energy in the complicated process that I described to you before. And there is a natural entry because the electrochemical reactor that is used to react the first molecule, acrylonitrile, to produce a dimer, which is adiponitrile, is an electrochemical reactor that requires electricity. So you could imagine designing photovoltaic cells that are tailored to drive the chemical reactor directly. And in that way, you transform the solar energy into electricity, and the electricity is used to drive the electrochemical processes. Then the three other steps that go downstream in the process that require heat, we think that we can provide that heat by concentrated sunlight, like pretty much like when you were a kid and then you will take a lens and then focus light in a piece of paper and then it catches fire. It's exactly the same, but in a large scale. And you can think about sending all of this energy into a reactor that uses that heat instead of to burn paper, but to actually carry out the chemical transformations needed in the process.
If you've just joined us, my guest is Miguel Modestino, and we're talking about his team at NYU and their invention to use renewable energy to replace fossil fuels to make nylon. At what stage of the development is your research at?
Yeah, so at this stage, we're basically on the conception stage. We do have a lot of experience with very similar processes. So what we're doing is we're leveraging the expertise that we already have to adapt it to this new process that is made to produce nylon. So at this stage, we only have some small proof of concept prototypes that are ready to be run. And we expect that in the next 3 months, roughly, we'll have the first results producing the precursors to nylon, at least for the first two steps.
Well, you've recently received a €250,000 grant from the H&M Foundation, an organization we featured here on GreenSense several times. How will you make use of that grant money?
Yeah, so the grant money will go directly to the research. The way that we work in academia is that we have a team that is composed of professors and PhD students, and the grant will go to actually fund the work of one PhD student in my group at NYU. And this is a collaboration also with EPFL, which is the Swiss Institute of Technology in Lausanne in Switzerland. And then the grant, then the other half of the grant will go to EPFL to fund a PhD student there. So with that money, we anticipate to cover the expenses to research in the next 2 years to bring the technology from the conceptual stage to a point in which you'll be ready for industry to start thinking about developing pilot scale plants.
How much does it cost to make nylon the traditional way? What type of a capital investment is in equipment?
Well, that's actually a difficult question, right? Because different plants have different scales. But at the end, we're talking about probably tens of millions of dollars in capital investment to develop one of these plants that, you know, produces hundreds of thousands of kilos.
And how will your new technology compare cost-wise?
Cost-wise, we anticipate that we might actually be able to provide some savings to the current manufacturing plants. Like what we're trying to do is not to change significantly the way that we produce nylon, but be able to have some turnkey solutions that can be implemented in existing infrastructure, because that in that way it's easier to implement and come because of the fact that by introducing solar cells directly, then these companies will not have to buy electricity from the grid. And usually you hear that clean electricity is more expensive than dirty electricity, but that probably has to do because of the fact that when you have solar cells in your house, then you need to pay a significant amount of money to put the solar cells on your roof. Then you need to send that energy into the grid. It needs to be managed. Then when it gets from the grid to the electrochemical plant, then you need to change that electricity from AC to DC because the reactors run on DC. And that adds to the cost. And at the end of the day, clean electricity costs roughly 10 cents per kilowatt hour, while electricity from brown sources costs roughly 7 cents per kilowatt hours. But if we use solar cells directly to run the chemistry without going through the grid and without having all of these AC to DC transformations, There have been examples in sunny places like southern Spain where electricity can be produced as low as 2 cents per kilowatt hour. So by doing so, we believe that we can actually bring some savings to an industry that already exists.
And, of course, reduce emissions, which is very important as we get more and more people on the earth. When might we be wearing clothing made this way?
So I expect probably in about 10 years because to carry out the research needed to develop the concepts and the operating conditions to run these plants will probably take about 2 years. And then to develop pilot scale plants, then it takes a little bit longer. So probably in about 10 years.
With science being ignored and overlooked and sometimes being the subject of budget cuts by the current administration, it's heartening to see that the private sector has stepped up and is supporting scientific development like this. Unfortunately, it seems like your money is coming from overseas. It would have been nice to see some American companies invest in this. But we appreciate you being on GreenSense, and we wish you the best of luck with your research.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
That's Miguel Modestino with New York University telling us their new solar textile discovery. I'm Robert Colangelo reminding you to subscribe to the GreenSense podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of GreenSense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports GreenSense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together GreenSense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep GreenSense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at GreenSense Radio, thank you.
A recent spill of hexavalent chromium, a known carcinogen, was released from the U.S. steel plant in Portage, Indiana. The nearby beach community of Ogden Dunes had to shut off its drinking water intake, and several beaches were closed along the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. Add to this, there's talk that the U.S. EPA Region 5 office in Chicago may close due to budget cuts. Many Americans are concerned about the negative impact the Trump administration's policy may have on the quality of the Great Lakes. Here to tell us more is Rachel Haverlock, associate professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago and founder of the Freshwater Lab. Rachel, welcome to GreenSense.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The environmental quality of the Great Lakes has greatly improved since the Cuyahoga River caught on fire in the late 60s and Lake Erie was reported to be dead. What factors do you see as the major contributors to the environmental improvement of the Great Lakes?
So things got really bad in the Great Lakes, as you said, with the Cuyahoga catching on fire and Lake Erie reaching a really toxic level. But that did bring about the Clean Water Act, actually brought into law by then President Nixon. And that act provided the motivation, the umbrella, and maybe most importantly, the funding to bring the lakes back to address the industrial pollution and get us where I think we all want to be in this region, which is drinkable, fishable, and swimmable lakes.
Hexavalent chromium has many industrial uses, and we mentioned that in the introductions. It's used as a coating to prevent corrosion as in a hardener of steel. It had its 15 minutes of fame. Not many chemicals can say that. In the movie Aaron Brockovich, and the movie told the story of how Pacific Gas and Electric covered up a large release of hexavalent chromium in a small California town in which it caused death and high rates of cancers to the small community. Can you tell us, Rachel, how hexavalent chromium was released at the U.S. steel plant in Portage?
Yeah, so to the best of our knowledge, U.S. Steel is using hexavalent chromium in plating, often used to sort of give the sheen or the plating to steel and tin. And it seems that one of the pipes that is meant to convey the chemical and is not meant to convey the chemical anywhere near the lake failed, which caused all of this hexavalent chromium to go pouring into the Burns waterway, which is ultimately feeds into Lake Michigan. So, you know, a pipe just kind of burst and failed. That's what we're getting from inside U.S. Steel, and poured this very heavy known carcinogen into a recreational area, and exactly as you said, really, really close to the place where all those communities around the seashore draw their water.
That seems a little poor process, poor procedure. Why isn't there berms and controls in place to stop a spill like this when they know they're using this toxic chemical?
So this moment, which is really concerning, and no one in the region, no one in the country, and certainly no one wherever you live, if you are getting your drinking water from Lake Michigan, which is a wonderful water source in general, really the world's best water, although the people in Lake Superior might have something to say, be concerned about this. U.S. Steel does not have the proper oversight. A lot of this falls down to how different states are allowed to regulate industrial processes. And Indiana is just a state that likes to flout protections for residents, for people, for water health, for air health, and to constantly give big companies a break. So we don't have the proper oversight in place. The people living near the steel plants and the BP refinery, all on this similar stretch of Lake Michigan coastline, do not adequately know what's going on in the factories. And we've got communities of working people living near these places. They don't have proper insight or oversight. We've also got a lot of north of there beach property owners.
Did the company have to pay a fine or reimburse the beachfront communities for damages from the release?
At this point, no. I mean, what often happens with a spill is we hear that they're working on it and they wait for the news cycle to pass, hoping that everyone will just forget about it.
So the EPA reported that the Northwest Indiana beaches and water is now safe. How can we trust the EPA to be an honest broker of information now that they're under extreme budget cuts and they have an administrator whose priorities appear to be cutting environmental regulations rather than protecting human health and the environment?
So in this very confusing time that you've outlined so well, we sort of have to work on two fronts. On the one hand, the people in the EPA doing the testing, doing the regulation, looking out for communities, we really need to support those people right now. Every single person who drinks Lake Michigan water needs to stand up right now and say, we need the EPA and we need these people on the ground working. So we have to support them. But at the same time, we cannot stop there. With Scott Pruitt in the EPA, everyday people, citizens, workers, residents do not have enough protection and enough cover, and we've got to come together and have our own Great Lakes-wide regional council so that people know what is pouring into the lakes, who is profiting from it, and what we are going to do when these repeated spills and breaches and moments of industrial error occur.
If you've just joined us, this is Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo, and we're talking with Rachel Haverlock about the water quality of the Great Lakes, a recent release of hexavalent chromium into Lake Michigan, and talks about closing the US EPA Chicago office. That's a mouthful. Well, Rachel, we again appreciate you being on the show. Surprisingly, there's no standard on the use of hexavalent chromium. Why are there not better controls in place and better standards, since this is a known carcinogen?
Yes, this is one of many carcinogens that are used in industrial processes, steel and tar sands refining that goes on the shores of Lake Michigan. And the reason that this is still being used is that we simply do not have proper ways of knowing and curbing what is going on in industrial plants and large corporations that traffic and use these chemicals. So it's a key moment when everyone, whether employed or benefiting from these industries or adverse to them, we've got to come together. We've got to make a demand that we deserve to know what chemicals are being used close to the shores of our drinking water source. And it's a key moment because the federal government is ready to increase the use and deregulate chemicals such as this. It does not matter who you voted for. We've got to band together so that we are not poisoned at the very shores of an amazing, sustainable freshwater source.
The Great Lakes, as you mentioned, is a precious resource. It's really going to differentiate the Midwest economically, in my opinion, in the future, because we have access to such a great freshwater body. And you're leading the Untrouble the Water Summit on May 10th and 11th in Chicago to discuss a number of issues along with the Clean Water Act, aging infrastructure, algal blooms, lead poisoning, and water shutoffs. Our listeners are from all over the country. Tell us, how do events and summits like this where people are talking really help the cause of the clean water supply?
So first of all, a summit like this does an important service of helping to get information out. This radio show is another great way for people to know what's going on with their water. Oftentimes when things are dumped or run off into water, they quickly become invisible. So it's very important for people who are stewards, who are at the lakefront, who are researching these issues, to always search for new ways to communicate this with the public. We have new barriers because at the federal level, there are very conscious and knowing blocks on this kind of information. So summits, radio shows, websites, gatherings, all of these things are key in setting up channels of public communication. What we will be looking at our May 10th and 11th Untrouble the Waters Summit as well is how do we create a council and even a kind of a governance structure for people to have more say and more oversight over the water, because exactly as you, we believe at the Freshwater Lab that the Great Lakes are going to set the agenda for the 21st century economy. It is for the people of the Great Lakes and many post-industrial cities to be the beneficiaries of that, not large corporations that have historically put human and ecosystem health at risk in order to increase their own profits.
That's Rachel Haverlock, founder of the Freshwater Lab, telling us about the recent Lake Michigan contamination and other issues around the Great Lakes. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. Send any comments or suggestions or ideas to robert@greensenseshow.com. We'll be back next week with...
We're going to be talking trash. There's a new line of sustainable trash bags. Also, green bonds. That is a hot, hot area of investing.
Subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play by visiting greensensefarms.com and view the list of radio stations that air our show. Our goal here is to be an honest broker of sustainable information so that you can make informed decisions. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at GreenSense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.
Green Sense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.